B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. As always, during the COVID-19 crisis, I hope this podcast finds you all safe, healthy, and playing some golf. And this week, I hope it finds you watching a lot of golf, as in the season's first major championship. In fact, the first major contested on the PGA Tour in more than a year, the 102nd PGA Championship at storied Harding Park in San Francisco. We've got you covered heading into the tournament this weekend with the thoughts of Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and Rod Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel, who will also offer his insight on the LPGA Tour's return to action last week. And we'll also check in with my old high school friend, University of Texas assistant head men's golf coach J.P. Hebert. 60 years ago this summer, his father, Jay, won his one and only major championship, the PGA Championship, at Firestone Country Club in Akron. 3 years prior, JP's uncle and Jay's younger brother, Lionel, won his PGA Championship. We'll hear all about being the son of a major champion and what that family dynamic was like. But we begin with Ron Green Jr. Ron, what did we learn last week in Memphis?
We got a new number one, don't we?
Yeah, everything that's old is new again.
Yeah. I mean, we learned that at least John Rahm's two-week tenure is not the shortest ever at number one. We're reminding me again of Tom Lehman's long one-week span at number one years ago.
How long was Luke Donald at the top? It wasn't very long, was it?
Over a year.
Really?
I want to say Luke Donald has the fifth or sixth most weeks ever at number one.
You could win so many bar bets with that, Ron. No one would ever guess that.
I think it was right around 55 or something.
No kidding. Consecutively?
He might have been bumped off once or twice, but he was just quietly there for a while. That was an interesting time. And, you know, I made some reference in a column the other day about great players, and I said something like, I don't know, you know, when you talk about great players the last few years, I mean, Luke Donald's number one for a year, but when you're talking the best players of their generation, does Luke Donald's name ever come up? Probably not.
Speaking of great players of a generation, the greatest stat this week is the fact that Bones McKay, for the first time in his career, will be on the bag for the number one ranked player in the world at a major.
Yeah, that is an interesting stat. You know, meanwhile, Mr. Aviator Glasses is going to try to win him another major. And, you know, he was right there and saw Bones working for JT last week, which probably a little awkward at times. But good for Bones. I mean, you know, as JT said earlier this week when asked how much impact Bones has on him, he goes, let's be honest, really not a whole lot. He didn't diss Caddy. So he goes, you know, they're not going to tell me how far to hit a club. I know what I'm going to hit. And basically just make sure they don't say the wrong thing.
Wow.
He goes, look, I know how far I hit a club. You know, there's nothing they're going to tell me about how to play, really, that's going to change anything I'm going to do.
Tell you one thing that I learned last week that I really like a lot about Justin Thomas is I think to be a great golfer and a great consistent top-level golfer and major champion, there's a certain level of amnesia that you need to have. If you ever hear Nicholas talk in clinics, he'll say he doesn't remember ever missing a putt. And for some people, what happened to JT at the workday at Muirfield just a couple of weeks ago would have really stung a lot of players. And he seemingly was able to compartmentalize that, push it out of his mind, and just be an assassin on Sunday and literally hold off a charging Brooks Koepka, which is something that not many people have been able to do in the last 3 years.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if I'd call it really amnesia. In a way, yes, it's like being a defensive back and having to, you know, forget you just got burned by the guy going deep two plays earlier. But, I mean, Justin also said, I'll be mad about what happened at workday the rest of my life. You know, it just really, really frustrated him, as it should. But I just think he's so good. I mean, you know what all that's that 13 wins by his age, only Nicklaus and Tiger and that amount of, you know, the last 60 years have done that. I just think, along with Rory, I think he's the most talented guy out there. I think he's the guy who, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see Justin Thomas win 35 or 40 tournaments over the course of his career. I think he's that good.
Wow.
And I think he is, you know, I think he knows how to win. He had a bad week and, you know, it got away from him and a bad final round. But I just think he's, you know, as I sit here before they tee off, I think he is the player to beat at Harding Park.
Because he is 23, and I don't know, it just seems like he hasn't been. Is this not the sneakiest 13 wins ever? I mean, it just seems, that number kind of surprised me. I know he has a major championship. I know he's won another WGC event or two, but it just seemed to me, wow, he's won 13 events this fast. It kind of snuck up on me.
You know, I don't know. I just feel like he's a guy who, when I see him in a field, I think he's got a chance to be really, really good and could win. I just think he is, you know, I can remember being at a Players' Championship a few years ago, and he was just sort of, I don't know if he was a rookie or whatever, and I was sitting there talking to him about, you know, how does somebody of your size hit it as far as you do? And I think, you know, he was sort of trying to explain it and all that. And shoot, I already remember him playing, what was it? He played as a, frankly, as a kid at the Wyndham Championship a few years back. And, you know, I remember the name and all that stuff. But I just think he's got that extra gear about him. He's got the understanding. He's got the, you know, the fire about him. And it's interesting, you know, if you'd roll the clock back 3 years ago and say, whose career would you rather have at the end, Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas's? I think it would all have sort of snowballed down one hill, but I'm not so sure it's the same way now.
Ron Green Jr. is with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. When was the last time you spent zero time on property at a major championship?
That would be the 2012 Open Championship. I think I've been to 29 in a row, something like that.
Can you take it or leave it this week, or do you miss it?
I miss being out there. I mean, I was all set to go, and then we changed given the way the virus is going, and particularly out there, and the boss decided he thought better of it. So, you know, there's a lot to like about being able to sit on your couch and watch it. Now, still having to work, but because almost nobody is out there, I mean, the virtual press conferences and access and all that stuff, you know, it gives you a lot of options, you know, or alternatives that you might not otherwise have. But, yeah, there's something to being out there. And I love being in San Francisco, and the fact that they're wearing sweatshirts and long sleeves and all that, like, given what we've been going through for the past 12 weeks or so, and have another month and a half of, I'd love that respite. But, I miss being out there. But, you know, I mean, it's a different time. And having talked to some people who are out there, like, you know, if you're ever going to miss one, this is the one to miss. But it's a major, and you hate to miss them.
Let's talk a little bit about Harding Park. I know before the world went to hell in a handbasket, you actually went out and played the course. But I think maybe February, early March, you were out there. Granted, it's entirely different because you've had a whole other growing season. But visually, I kind of dig Harding Park because of the enormous cypress trees. Those are things that I've never seen in my life. And so when I see them, I just marvel at them and go, wow. And I know they eat golf balls. But as a golf course, is there a major championship venue you can compare Harding Park to? Or is this a venue that isn't a major championship course, but they've sort of tricked it up to make it so?
Well, I'm with you with the trees. I think anytime you go out there, I think there's such a, you know, it's so different. It's like if you never really played at the coast or something, you get down playing around palm trees, you're like, wow, look at that. It's just something you don't see all the time. That's what that is out there for us. And lots of times you can sort of, there's eucalyptus trees out there. And I always think, like, particularly at the Olympic Club, which is literally across the street, you just smell the eucalyptus when you're out there. I mean, I think Harding Park's a very good golf course. You go back to, you know, the tour event they used to play out there, the Lucky International or whatever they called it. And you look at the list of the people who won there, and basically all but one were Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And, you know, which speaks to some says something about a golf course. I don't, you know, somebody asked Rory if it was coincidence or not, and he goes, well, I think there's some coincidence that it happens that way. But, I mean, I think Harding Park's good. It's got the, let me think now, when I was out there for the World Golf Championship, the match play a few years ago when Tiger beat Gary Woodland, the routing was different, sort of like what they're going to do with Quail Hollow for the President's Cup. So, you know, I remember walking around thinking, well, this is not the kind of 18th hole you'd think for a place like this, only to realize, oh, that's right, that's not the 18th hole. It's like the 9th hole. And so what they have, I'm thinking if you could have 13, the last five holes out there are really, really good. You got to hit some really good shots, some beautiful tee shots. I will lose track of the number 14 or 15, just a great-looking par 4. You kind of go down, come back up. You got this little loop around the end. 18 is just, I mean, you're going to have to win it there. I mean, I think it's going to play like 480, but given the thick air, it's going to feel like longer than that, and big sort of sweeping dogleg to a green that is asking for anything but golf balls to land on it. So it's, I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to look great there, and you know, and once it gets going, you know, it's obviously about the golf course, but it'll just become about what happens. I'm very interested to see how well they play it, because I think the mornings are going to be so, it's going to be so heavy. You know, who was it? Justin Thomas, I think, said he, same swing speeds he had at Memphis, and the ball was going, driver was going 20 yards shorter. So there's an adjustment there. But in the afternoon, it's theoretically going to warm up a little bit. So, you know, early, late, the first 2 days could have a big impact. But, you know, what's it been? 13 months since they've played a major? I mean, they could play it over there at Renaissance Park, and I'd be excited about it.
With the thickness and depth of the rough and the complete lack of spectators that's there, could this be the first big tournament that the three-minute looking for a lost ball rule could come into effect and play a major role?
It could be, for sure. And then there's also the other factor out there with the cypress trees is sometimes you hit them up there and they don't come down. And you don't have all the people standing around underneath it who tell you, hey, it's up there on the fourth limb up, you know. So you've got that to wonder about. I think, yeah, they'll have obviously some marshals out there, but I think it's a there will probably be some lost balls in there because it's, I mean, it was thick when we played out there in late February or whenever, and now they've got it pretty well primed. You know, I still think it's going to reward the bombers. The biggest hitters can go in there and just still hit it so far that they can negate some of what the rough does. I'm one of those guys who don't love the ultra-thick rough. I don't want it to be where if you hit it in a rough, you got to pitch out, because I think that, you know, it takes away recovery shots. It takes...
We'll get enough of that at Wingfoot next month.
we'll get more than enough of that. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it's just like clam chowder up there right now.
Ron Green-Jugers with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, let's do some handicapping here. I've got three categories: they can win, top 10, or see it at Wingfoot. You've already talked about Justin Thomas. He's your pick, so we're going to go he can win on that one. That's an obvious one. Brooks Koepka going for three in a row. Can win, top 10, or see it at Wingfoot?
Absolutely can win. And I said Justin Thomas was my one. Well, Brooks is my 1B, and I'd almost put those two guys separate from everybody else.
He just started acting like Brooks Koepka on Sunday again, and I thought, look, when he gets going like that, it excites me to watch golf. There's something about the way he attacks a golf course, and even when he wrenched that drive on 18, it wasn't like he hit a poor shot. He just took a poor angle, and he didn't have enough club.
Yeah, I feel much different about Brooks Koepka today than I felt about him 2 weeks ago.
John Rahm, can win, top 10, see at Wingfoot.
Top 10.
Yeah, for all the talk about him getting his emotions under control and yada, 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 I still see him blow a gasket way too often to compete right now at a major championship level. I think he could win at Augusta. I think his game is just perfect for Augusta, but you start throwing in rough and I just think he gets frustrated.
You know, well, but he has a top five in three of the four majors already, so I mean, he's not scared of the moment.
Rory McIlroy, can win, top 10, see at Wingfoot.
can win. It's like the little edge is missing. You know, he's not played as well. I don't think his short game's been as good lately. I would never say he couldn't win. But I think he's got to find that little bit that's gone missing. And he knows it's been, you know, was it 2014 since he's won a major? He knows all about that. I think he is. He's a guy you'd consider, but he's not necessarily the Rory you would like. His recent form doesn't suggest he's Rory at the top of his game at the moment.
The most interesting man in golf, and it's not even close. He's one of the most interesting people in sports right now. Bryson DeChambeau can win top 10. See you at Wingfoot.
Oh, I think he could absolutely win. As much as power is going to be probably an advantage at this tournament, so I think he certainly can win. But my gosh, if he wins, just imagine the reaction and all the, you know, forget the future golf. It'll be the now of golf.
Patrick Cantlay can win top 10. See you at Wingfoot.
He's been awful quiet. You know, I thought he might win at Memorial, and he kept making double bogeys at the wrong time. I think he certainly could win. I think he's a top 15, top 20 guy. I just don't see him with the, you know, he hasn't given me any reason to say he's going to win. But, again, Patrick Cantlay's not the kind of guy who you expect to go miss a cut, you know?
Right. Dustin Johnson plays great, disappears, plays okay again, can win top 10 or see you at Wingfoot.
You know, I think my asterisk with Dustin Johnson is the back issue he had a while back. You know, he had lost, he was hitting it about a club shorter because of this muscle issue he was having in his back that sort of led to, I mean, the 80-80 at Memorial, he does not play Muirfield very well, doesn't really love it. But then when he shot 78 with Drew, it raised some suspicions. I'll give you a see you at Wingfoot, which I'll probably regret, you know, by Sunday night, thinking, how did I not see Dustin Johnson coming?
Full disclosure, this is my pick. I've just got a feeling about this guy. I love his game, and
I'm going to guess him before you tell me.
Okay? Yes. Go.
Xander Schauffele.
No. Mm. Here is my pick. I love his game. I love the fact that he went to school there, so the weather and all that's not going to mess with him. And I love how straight he hits the golf ball. Colin Morikawa can win top 10. See you at Wingfoot.
Certainly can win. I think so. I mean, you know, pretty soon one of those new era guys is going to win. I mean, Morikawa is a good one. Obvious pick there. I would still, if you gave me head to head, I'd still take Webb Simpson over Colin Morikawa this week. I think we sort of overlook Webb, who also won across the street there too, and a pretty big one.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, I mean, if you take Morikawa to top 10 the rest of your rest of his career, you're going to do pretty darn well.
Yeah, he's going to be an ATM machine. All right, we could do this all day, but I'll get you out of here with the obvious. Everybody likes to talk about him. Tiger Woods can win top 10. See you at Wingfoot.
I'm just not feeling it for Tiger right now.
I'm not either.
He'll make the cut, but I just, the fact, you know, and he's putting a different putter, at least fooling around with a different putter, a little weightier Scotty Cameron this week for the greens. If there's anything you never say never, I mean, you never count Tiger out, but I think he will make the cut. I think he'll play a couple good rounds, but I don't think Sunday afternoon we're going to be talking about Tiger in contention.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And up next, the son of PGA champion Jay Hebert, JP, takes dead aim at his father's historic major championship 60 years ago this summer, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hey there, we are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. J.P. Hebert and I went to high school together. He's the nephew of the 1957 PGA champion Lionel Hebert and son of Jay Hebert, who won his one and only major championship, the PGA Championship, 60 years ago this summer. JP, before we get to the 60th anniversary of your dad's crowning achievement in golf, you are the assistant golf coach at the University of Texas, one of the more prestigious college golf programs in the country. Everything in the golf world and in the college golf world got turned upside down last spring. Everything abruptly ended in the middle of March. Where is college golf now with the University of Texas and just in general?
Good to be back. Good to chat with you. You know, there's so many things that are up in the air still. I mean, I just feel like there's any word that describes kind of what we've all been going through. It's unknown. So, you know, but college golf, we're hoping for something here in the fall. We may have an update here soon, but we're hoping for fall golf. We're hoping for some NCAA fall golf, and if we can have that, I think it will be a huge, there'll be a lot of happy people in college golf. And if not, if we end up just going to a traditional spring championship semester of golf in the spring, then we believe that there'll be some unattached tournaments to pop up for college kids to play in the fall.
Yeah, I would think that something like that would happen. Just based on what I keep reading and what I keep hearing from other coaches here in the southeastern United States, you know, with golf being what they would call a traditional non-revenue producing sport, you know, and with universities being strapped cash-wise, that what you may see is not near the travel that you normally would in a fall golf season, and that if there is fall golf, official NCAA fall golf, it'll all be very, very regional and localized. Is that sort of your feel?
That's right. You know, we're all expecting to play a regionalized schedule, kind of. You know, in our part of the country, it would be similar to the old Southwest Conference, where we just basically play throughout the state of Texas and maybe drive and play some little one-day matches. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a little A&M rivalry going again. But yeah, we just want to, you know, we're hoping to be able to play. But ultimately, hopefully we can have a championship in the spring. And it all hinges upon football, as everybody knows. That's the big money maker.
Really, football's big at the University of Texas.
Well, it's big. Yeah, it's big. You know, we've got a big mascot. We've got a big stadium. We've got a big state. You know, but football is, man. If we could play football. If we could play a full home game schedule at 50% capacity, I'd take it right now.
Yeah, I think everybody would. Full disclosure, J.P. Hebert and I are we go back way too far. We went to school together, so if you're wondering why I'm able to rib him more than any other guest, that's the reason why. He's the assistant head men's golf coach at the University of Texas. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. And if you can guess by the last name, he is the nephew of PGA champion Lionel Hebert and the son of PGA champion Jay Hebert. In fact, that PGA Championship. This is the 60th anniversary of your dad's title at Firestone?
That's right. 60th.
Wow.
You know, 1960, there was actually a pretty good book written about the summer of 1960. Kurt Sampson wrote a book called The Eternal Summer.
Oh, well, you had the great U.S. Open in Denver with, it was Hogan's last stand with Palmer and Nicklaus, yeah.
Really, 1960 was kind of a watershed moment in not only in golf, but in the kind of the golden age of golf. Jack Nicklaus was a 19-year-old reigning amateur champion. He was an amateur, and he played in the U.S. Open, and he played in the Masters. Arnold Palmer was absolutely in his prime, 30 years old. He had just won the Masters. And the U.S. Open, and Ben Hogan was 47-year-old, still competitive guy out there, and the PGA was played at Firestone Country Club, a newly renovated Firestone Country Club, and it was a monster.
Still is.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, it was a brand new golf course then, and it truly was a monster. I don't think Palmer had nice things to say about it at week's end, but my father, Jay Hebert, was able to win his one and only major there that week, and follow up what his younger brother had done 3 years prior in 1957.
You mentioned your Uncle Lionel. He won the last year that the PGA was contested in the match play format. Your dad won in medal play, which is what we know today the championship to be. What was the rivalry between those two? I mean, I know you and your brother, and anybody who has a brother knows that giving the needle's just part of it. Did they sort of have a back and forth about, well, I've got one of these and you don't, until your dad won?
You know, honestly, they really just, you know, loved and supported each other. I think more than you would imagine. Lionel, the younger brother, 5 years younger, he led in Lafayette, Louisiana. He led their high school team to a state championship when he was in the eighth grade.
Wow!
So he was always kind of this kid, this young kid that, you know, wasn't afraid of the older kids. And but in 1957, Lionel was a rookie on tour, and it was match play, as you know, and it was 128 guys straight into match play. So no medal play, no 64, 128 guys straight in, single elimination match play, and the semis and the finals were 36 hole matches. So it was just a marathon, and I mean, for him to win that, for them to bring that Wanamaker Trophy back to Louisiana two times, it's just impossible to think that actually happened.
There's a great article this week, and I think it's at PGAtour.com, about that trophy coming home to Louisiana. And you had told me this story before about your grandmother and what she had to say when your dad came home with the trophy again. Can you share that?
Oh, me. I just love it, you know, that their mom, Antonia Landry Hebert, spoke very little English and very, really no English in the home. And, but she was just that proud mom that when that Wanamaker Trophy came home, she probably didn't know much about it, but she displayed it there in the house, and then 3 years later, the trophy came back to its same resting place there, and she was kind of cleaning it up one day, and she was speaking French to it, saying, you know what, I bet you didn't think you'd be back here again, you know, talking to the trophy like it was alive.
That is the best story. Now, in today's era, when you win a PGA, you win the Wanamaker Trophy, or you win the British Open Trophy, all of these pros, you get to hold that trophy for a year, but you have to return it. And everybody has a replica made, pretty much, nowadays. Yeah. Did your dad have a replica of the Wanamaker in the house?
You know what? Back then, they only gave them the trophy they gave them. It was kind of almost like an oversized kind of a goblet. It really wasn't a replica.
Gotcha.
And nowadays, yeah, the winners receive a replica that is 90% the size of the original trophy, which is pretty big.
Yeah.
And Steve Elkington can probably tell you exactly how many beers fit, poured, or will top it off.
As a matter of fact, he has given me that number, and I've forgotten. Yeah. I had him on the show 1 year after the PGA, and he told me that number. I've got to look that back up.
He knows the exact number. He's got the count. But you know what? I talked to Steve about this, and I'm interested in trying to talk to the PGA of America and maybe try to find a way to purchase a replica or try to acquire one somehow just to have for the family.
Oh, I think that would be great, and I think they would work with you. J.P. Hebert is the son of Jay Hebert. 60 years ago won the PGA Championship at Firestone, and I say that was his crowning achievement. As an individual golfer, yes, but he went on, he played on two Ryder Cup teams, captained a Ryder Cup team, and among his contemporaries, and I'm going to use that term now, but let me narrow it down a little further, on his friend list, as far as not just on Facebook, but his friends who would come over to the house were people like Jimmy DeMeritt and Jackie Burke, who you know, founded Champions where you grew up. Ben Hogan was a friend of your father's.
Right.
At what point growing up did you realize that your father was more than just a golfer, that he was someone special in the world of golf?
I never really thought of him more than just a dad. That's what kids do.
See, I've told people that who find out that I knew you, and they're like, well, what was it like? Jay Hebert said, honestly, he was just JP and his brother's dad. I mean,
he was Jason and
JP's dad. That's just who he was. We didn't think about anything else. I said, and to be honest with you, it wasn't until I was an adult and got into the golf business that I sort of dove in and said, you know what? That's so ridiculous that I didn't know how big a deal Jay Hebert was.
Well, no, and what I was going to say is, you know, when we would go somewhere, like when we go to go out of town or go to a nice, a golf club, or, you know, we'd go to a tournament, and then the way that people would treat him with such respect and they were happy to see him, it was then I think I felt like, oh gosh, okay, we're away from the house now. He's not just my dad anymore. They're like, this is pretty cool. Or when we go to Augusta National, he was on the tournament committee there for 17 years for the Masters to help, you know, on the,
he helped set the pins on Sunday, didn't he?
Yeah, he set the pins and the tees for the four rounds of competition. And since, David Graham has been doing that. So he's been the player representative on that committee now for probably 25 years.
Wow.
So it was in those moments that you realize, oh, okay, man, yeah, this maybe my dad is something more than just a dad. But, you know, people ask me all the time. I see kids out there working on the range, and their parents are with them, and I could just see the kids don't really want to listen to their dad, what their dad has to say. And I'll go up to their dad and say, look, don't worry about it. You're the dad. The kids aren't going to listen to you. My dad won a PGA championship, and I didn't feel like listening to him either. So don't worry about it.
Well, man, best of luck to you as you head into this fall season with the University of Texas. And I hope you and your family are well. And thanks for sharing some memories of your dad. This is anniversary number 60. And for crying out loud, call the PGA and get that replica made.
Well, I will. Thank you for the reminder. And I'll get to work on that.
That's the University of Texas assistant head men's golf coach and son of PGA champion Jay Hebert. My friend J.P. Hebert. And when we return, Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel takes dead aim at the LPGA's return to action last week and the 102nd PGA Championship this week. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're taking dead aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Cyrak is a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism. So, with the 102nd PGA Championship happening this week, who better to talk to? Also, there's no one better to hear from when it comes to last week's return of the LPGA Tour. Ron, let's begin with the return of the LPGA to action last week. I guess the best way that I like to think about the LPGA at times, and this is definitely one of them, is I think of Mike Wann and the LPGA at times as the little train that could. That they just find a way, and they're able to make lemonade out of lemons. And last week is a prime example. There was no such thing as the LPGA Drive-On Championship when the schedule was announced at the beginning of the year, yes?
Yeah, you know, this is a great example of what 70 years of the LPGA has been like. There have been so many times when people have tried to bury them, you know, just saying that they weren't going to, but they just kept chugging along and chugging along. And, yeah, the Drive On Championship was thrown together in about 5 weeks. They pulled together some sponsors whose tournaments were canceled. Aon jumped in because their risk-reward million-dollar bonus isn't going to happen this year. They ponied up some money. The Inverness Club stepped up really big and gave up their golf course on short notice. And they went out and they put an event in to, A, give the players some chance at competition, and B, give them a chance at a payday. And they did it at Inverness in Toledo because the next week was going to be the Marathon Classic in the Toledo area also. So they were able to keep everybody there in their bubble for 2 weeks. It just was a win-win-win by every possible measuring stick, including the fact that that Danielle Kang ended up being the winner, and she's as feisty as the tour.
We'll get to the players in just a second, but you brought up one of the things I wanted to discuss immediately, and that is Inverness. This is a very storied golf club with quite a history, but quite frankly, the men have outgrown it. And I, for one, was just happy to see Inverness back on TV again. And aren't they hosting a Solheim Cup or a U.S. Women's Open coming up?
They had the Solheim Cup next year, and yeah, it's a golf course. It's had four U.S. Opens, two PGA Championships. It's famously known as one of the first golf clubs to let professionals actually into the locker room and treat them like not hired hands, but actual professional golfers. But it was a good preview of the Solheim venue next year. I believe they're going to flip the nines for the Solheim Cup for spectator reasons. And that should be an incredible event because the Solheim last year at Glen Eagles in Scotland was one of the most exciting tournaments I've ever covered, decided by the last putt on the last hole by the last player left on the golf course. And that was Suzanne Pettersson for Europe. And the United States is going to go into Toledo next year fired up trying to get the cup back.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. Last year's Solheim Cup, and it was different for me because I have a dog in the fight because Brittany Altomare is a friend of mine. And so to watch her play so well and to have a personal rooting interest in it made it even more sweet. But I thought the Solheim Cup was a spectacular event last year. Ron Cyrak with the Golf Channel and ronsyrak.com is our guest taking Dead Aim. Danielle Kang, this is 4 wins in 4 years, had a storied amateur career, and it just seemed it took a while for her to figure it out on the professional level. And that's not uncommon on the men or women's tour, quite frankly.
Yeah, she won back-to-back U.S. Women Amateur Championships, but it took her a while to get going. When she won the KPMG in 2017, KPMG Women's PGA Championship, people sort of thought that she would come out gangbusters, and she's been steady. She's been winning. But she has really taken it to another level since last year's Solheim Cup. Since then, she's had 2 wins, a second, and 2/3. And you know, my car ride to Edinburgh Airport the day after the Solheim Cup, I shared the car with Danielle's mother, and she was telling me how Danielle really, really took that loss personally. She had said early in the week that she wanted to step on the throat of the Europeans, and so she got hammered in the Scottish press for saying that. And then she went out, and after playing the 2017 Solheim Cup with a 3-1-0 record, she was 1-3-0 at Glen Eagles, went out in the first singles match of the day and got beat one up by Carlotta Singanda, and for a match it ended up 14.5-13.5. That was a crucial point. But her mom told me that she really, really took it personally. She thought that her quotes early in the week had fired up Europe even more, gave them bulletin board material. And she's played that way since the Solheim Cup. She's been played incredibly well the last 10, 11 months now.
Ron, the makeup of the field was interesting to me in not just who was there, but who was not there. What are the – I'm unfamiliar with the rules of the LPGA Tour. I know what the PGA Tour is and kind of how they've had to modify it as far as players coming from overseas and in terms of how long they have to quarantine before they can compete. What are the fears happening from ladies from South Korea and Japan, for instance, coming over here? What it just seemed that there was an Asian contingent that just was not present.
Well, Mike Wann, the commissioner, I think has been one of the really great leaders in all of sports during the COVID thing.
No question.
The LPGA was one of the first tours to shut down. And being Golf's global tour, they have a lot of issues. About a third of the LPGA members live outside the United States. And Mike Wann told them he would give everybody enough notice to get where they have to go so that they could quarantine. So he said, I'm going to give you 45 days notice before we're coming back so that you quarantine. Now, the problem for a lot of the players based outside the United States is that you have issues, not only protocols to follow, not only going into the United States, but then going back home again. So it's a problem at both ends. And there were only a couple of Koreans who made the trip to Toledo to play last week and this week. And from what I've seen on the advance commit list for the Scottish Open and then the Women's British Open, there's still not a lot of Koreans who are going there. And we may just see them stay home for the rest of the year because, as I said, for them, the issue is not just getting in the United States or getting into Britain. It's getting back into Korea when they go back home.
Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim. Another thing that I noticed that was interesting at times, the LPGA event this last week resembled an old college golf tournament. Some players hauling their own clubs, using push carts. Some had caddies. Some didn't. Caddies are optional the rest of the year. So I understand it just had a really weird look to it.
Yeah, it did. It sort of reminded me of once I was in I went over to when Solheim Cup was in Scotland in 2007, or not Scotland, Sweden in 2007. I went over a little bit early for some vacation. I was on the ferry going from Sweden to Denmark, and I look over, and there was a woman on the ferry with her golf clubs on a pool cart. And so I asked her, I said, oh, you going to play? And she was going to an LET event, a Ladies European Tour event. She was in the field. So you see that over there a lot, where you see the players not using caddies and pulling their own clubs around. Who knows? Maybe this will be the beginning of a trend.
Now, you have the Women's British Open coming up. You mentioned that. What is the rest of their major championship schedule?
Well, the ANA Inspiration is the second week of September in the desert in Palm Springs at Rancho Mirage. The KPMG Women's PGA Championship is in October at Arana Mink outside Philadelphia. And then the U.S. Women's Open is in Houston in December. And it's looking like right now, like that might be the last tournament of the year for the LPGA. I think it's the week before Christmas or maybe 2 weeks before.
A USGA championship being conducted in December. We are in strange times indeed. Ron, let's shift gears. The PGA championship was scheduled to be held in May at Harding Park in San Francisco. It's being conducted this week. It is the season's first major as we turn to the first full weekend in August, or second full weekend in August. I'm going to give you just a couple of names. And we're going to divide them into categories. Either they could win, top 10, or just see it wingfoot, meaning they don't have a shot, okay?
All right, but before you do that, I have to ask you an ethical question.
Yes.
I'm covering the PGA Championship for PGA Tour or for the PGA of America's website this week. So it's my 175th major, but the first one I've covered virtually from home. Do I get to count it as a major covered, or does it not count?
Well, no. There's no ethical question about this or not. Are you getting a check?
I am.
Then you are. Then it counts.
You and my accountant agree.
All right. So again, our categories are could win, top 10, or see it wingfoot.
All right.
Rory McIlroy.
Could win.
Yeah, I think he's such a beautiful driver of the golf ball, and more pictures I see of the rough at Harding Park, you better be in the fairway. I think this week could have a very U.S. Open feel to it.
He might be the best driver of the golf ball I've ever seen, and when he has his A game, he's the best player in the world. Rory's problem, in my mind, is he doesn't win with his B game. He hasn't figured that out yet.
Justin Thomas, coming off a huge win in Memphis.
Yeah, I think that he could win, too. I wrote a piece yesterday about Rory McIlroy won a PGA, having won a World Golf Championship event the week before. Tiger Woods won a PGA, having won a World Golf Championship event the week before. So maybe Justin can come in and do the same thing.
I think what I like about him almost more than any other quote-unquote young player out there that's had a great deal of success, he has a gunslinger's mentality, and he is able to have amnesia. A lot of people, after what happened to him at Muirfield Village the week before the memorial, would have been shell-shocked. But the next time he got right back into battle, he shut the door on Brooks Koepka. I mean, he just shut the door on him. And I like that about him. He's fearless, and he's an assassin, and he has amnesia. These are all traits that I really like about championship golfers.
He gave me a great quote when he's the same age. Daniel Berger, Thomas, and Jordan Spieth are all the same age. So they're in college together. Spieth comes out of college after his freshman year, comes out on tour, and boom, wins the John Deere right out of the gate at age 19, just before his 20th birthday. And Justin Thomas says, Daniel Berger and I looked at each other and said, wait a minute. We beat that guy in college. You know, we can win on the tour, too. So they dropped out after their sophomore year and came out on tour. He said, you know, and he's always had that attitude. Like, you know, I can play with anybody.
John Rahm, former number one player in the world. Top 10, could win or see at Wingfoot.
You know, he's a guy I've picked. John Rahm's game fits Augusta National so well.
I agree.
That he's going to win the Masters someday, I think. I'm not entirely sure he's going to he drives the ball straight enough to get it done this week at Harding Park, but I think he'll play well enough to be top 10.
Top 10. All right. We mentioned him already. All of a sudden, he came out of nowhere and looked like Brooks Koepka again on Sunday. Brooks Koepka, top 10, could win or see at Wingfoot.
I'm going to go top 10 with him. I do think that, you know, winning three in a row, I mean, think of where that would put him. Willie Anderson won the U.S. Open three times in a row. Walter Hagen won the PGA Championship four times in a row when it was match play. And that's it.
That's the list.
That's the list right there.
Bryson DeChambeau. Most fascinating person in the game, bar none. Top 10, could win, see at Wingfoot.
I'm going to go with see at Wingfoot
I am
here.
Too.
I'm just wondering who he's going to argue with this week. You know, I mean, here's a guy who's going out playing golf tournaments where there's virtually nobody on the golf course, and he still finds somebody to be annoyed at.
Yeah, as much as I admire what he's trying to do, and at times it's very effective, and in fact, I can't wait to see it at Augusta National. I think that's a course where he could really, really do something special. I just think any place that has any significant rough off of the fairway, and especially they've pinched in Harding Park by as much as 30 yards in spots, you're not going to be able to play bomb and gouge at Harding Park.
Now, he's been proving me wrong every step of the way. When he first came out, I thought the having all the irons the same length was a lot of hooey. I thought his, I'm a physicist and I'm into quantum mechanics and all that stuff. I thought that was a lot of hooey. And I thought he was overthinking everything, and he proved me wrong by winning. And then he became the Incredible Hulk, and I thought he was way too big. And the way he's been driving the golf ball, I mean, you know, has been really, really impressive. So maybe he's going to prove me wrong again. But I'm with you. I don't think his game is a good fit for this particular golf course.
Okay, here is my pick this week. So regardless of what you say, I've got this guy in the middle of the table. Colin Morikawa, top 10, could win, see at Wingfoot.
See you at Wingfoot, just to annoy you. No, I like everything about Colin's game, I thought it was really impressive that you know he won the workday in a playoff after missing one of the shorter putts I've ever seen anybody miss when they were trying to make it. You know,
at Colonial, yeah,
I've seen people backhanded. Oh yes, exactly. I've seen people backhanded and miss putts like that, but actually trying to make it. That was a pretty short miss, but I like everything about him, but I'll go with C at Wingfoot.
And I know where you're probably going to go with this, but I have to ask anyway, wrapping things up, Tiger Woods, top 10, could win, C at Wingfoot.
I think we're going to go C at Wingfoot.
Yeah,
there. It's hard for me to believe that you can play. I mean, he's played four rounds of competitive golf in 6 months, you know. What's he played, like eight rounds this year? I mean, it's, but look, here's the bottom line for Tiger, and this is going to be true the rest of his career. It's all a question of how his body holds up. Here's what's encouraging. I think he's driving the golf ball straighter now than I've ever seen him drive it. It seems like he's made priority number one, put the ball in the fairway off the tee, and he's been doing that really, really well. And I thought the President's Cup, he was the best player of the 24 players who were there, and particularly driving the golf ball. And but it's all about whether he's got a knee that's been operated on four times, a back that's been operated on four times. Just got to see how things hold together.
All I know is I've been around people that have bad backs. My back is tender. And any place that Mark Twain said the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. Cold weather and bad back just don't mix. And you know he's going to have an early tee time. Maybe gets delayed by marine layer. It's going to be chillier. I think he has more trouble getting out all the parts lubed up enough to be effective for four rounds.
I know when I covered the U.S. Open at the Olympic Club out there, my hotel was on the bayside, and I'd leave my hotel in the morning, it'd be 76 degrees, and I'd get to the Olympic Club and it'd be 52 degrees. It was like, where'd those other 24 degrees go? And, you know, it was only like a 12-mile drive. And it sounds like it is going to be a cool, damp week out there.
From RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, that, of course, is Ron Cyrak. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer and the University of Texas, assistant head men's golf coach and son of PGA champion Jay Hebert, my old friend from high school, J.P. Hebert, for their time and insight this week. Want to remind you to keep up with us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Give us a like. Featured there now are links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game, including the wildest story of a best-of-luck, worst-of-luck finish to a golf tournament that took place at the Maine Junior Championship. You will not believe it. Weather-wise, here in the QC this weekend, it's August. It's hot. It's humid. You'll be dodging a storm or two, but it's a great place to be to get out with all safe practices, of course, and tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and watch the PGA Championship.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.